June 17, 2006. It's the Watt from Pedro Show. Steve, the Lobos, all the Blasters, they were in our band. It was a good band.
Shut that one.
Shut that one.
Shut up and play. Here's a song I wrote for Jimmy, because he used to drink too much. So I take a half gallon or something out of his pocket or something, and drink it, because so he would drink it. A whiskey. It's called I've Been Drinking Again. Another true story of my miserable fucking life. Don't laugh, it's not funny. That's supposed to be a joke.
Studio guest, Mr. Carlos Catarlos.
Yeah, I was on the pest list and I came right up.
Welcome.
Yeah, welcome.
Boy. Behind the velvet rope.
And that was you on your birthday 5 years ago, San Francisco, right?
And I was so loaded, I don't remember any of it.
Well, the song was called
I've Been Drinking Again, and I was.
And we started off with John Coltrane, The Last Blues. But that wasn't your last blues. You've got many, many blues.
Bros? American Bros like Budweiser? Bros.
What's the tester one? I like garlic. I really like garlic. Yeah, that's the one. Say that.
Garlic. I really like garlic.
No, but with that...
garlic. I like garlic.
No, but they transpose the R's and the L's. So.
Oh, do they? Okay. Well, I don't have a transposer with me. I left it on the Enterprise when I used to get high.
Ileri Reich Galric. All right.
I like the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Dodgers. Oh, speaking of Dodger games, don't ever go to a game with Brother Matt.
Why is that?
Well, for one, he doesn't need anybody. He's big enough to fill up all three seats now. But we went to a game. We got there at 7 o'clock, 7:15. Game starts at 7:40. By 11 o'clock, we were soaking wet. The game hadn't started yet.
Rain out.
It was a rain out. It was a pain out.
But?
It was rainy. And then I get home, and by 11:30, I'm home, turn on the TV, and the game starts.
They started playing right when we...
At 11:30, they started playing.
Oh, it
was
a holdout.
Oh.
So.
And then the last time he invited me to a game, somebody else invited me to a game the same night, I couldn't go.
You're playing a gig or something?
You're in demand.
I was playing a gig, yeah.
You're in demand.
Hey, this is a nice guitar, Boom.
Yeah, it's happening. He did all the solos for Double Nickels on the dime with that guitar.
Oh, yeah?
Through one of those little green things, what do they call it? Tube Screamer.
You guys had enough songs on that record to get some change back. So,
you're in Pedro. Is this your first time? No.
No, I've been.
We Jammy Connell used that one.
That's right, at the premiere.
No, back in 1945, I came here with a bunch of cholos and we kicked a bunch of sailors' asses.
Yeah. But today you're here because you're on the way to Long Beach.
That's right. We're going to Long Beach. I'm going to play at tonight at what's it called?
Viento y Agua Gallery.
The Wind and the Water. The Viento y Agua. At 4th and...
Terminal.
4th and Terminal in Long Beach. Yeah. Right down the street from the Pike, where I'll be playing later at about 9:30.
Do you remember the Pike when it had the wooden roller coaster?
No.
Yeah, it did. When I came to Pedro in 68.
What?
You never came down for that action, huh?
My dad was always at the racetrack.
You never made it down to Long Beach.
A couple times we were supposed to be at the trains at Griffith Park, but we were at the Olympic, and my dad knew everybody. The boxers, the promoters, the underworld guys, everybody. Everybody.
Well, let's start from the beginning. So were you born in L.A.?
Well, if you start at the beginning, my first words were, I want an apple. And then after that?
Was it in L.A., though?
Yes, I was born and raised in L.A. I was born on the ninth floor at General Hospital at 4:21 a.m. It was a Tuesday in 1950.
All right.
Back before time started.
And what part did you grow up in? You know, we're spread
Well,
out.
We grew up, I was in Bachelon Homes, which is right where Hanson Dam is. Uh-huh. There were a bunch of Navy Kwanzaa huts there. Kwanzaa holiday huts?
Yeah, they're half cans.
Yeah. And then we moved to Mateo Street down, and Mateo and 11th, down near the Swiss Armor Factory.
Yeah.
And we moved out of there when my niece and my younger brother, we were in the backyard. We ran to the front, and we just in time to see my niece get slammed by a car because her and my brother were putting pennies on the tracks. And so, and then we moved to Cypress Park.
Yeah.
Two places in Cypress Park, and I stayed there until we moved over to right off Alvarado and Glendale near Sunset, near the Burrito King. I was at Burrito King opening day. They had tostadas as big as Matt's forehead, which is large. If you count his jowls, that's like three. They were huge for 75 cents.
Wow.
They were delicious.
Yeah. I'm sorry, brother.
68, 69.
Okay.
Do you remember your first music, though?
In those early days, were you hearing music?
Well, my older brother started playing when he was 10 and I was 8.
Okay.
So by the time I was 10, I got my first guitar. I came home and my mother had it there waiting for me. We got it from Mr. Acosta, who had just died. We started paying for it like a dollar at a time. I didn't know this until later. And then about a week after I got it, My younger brother saw Mr. Acosta on the steps across the street. But he was dead, so that was cool.
Oh, man.
Where the hell's my guitar? Tune that thing.
So you started playing before you took off?
Yeah, I started playing when I was 10, yeah.
You remember the first song I learned?
My older brother showed me this. And then this. About a month later, I got this. And my uncle showed me this. And from there, I just played by myself.
You play by yourself. Do you remember your... Well, what about your first band?
First band? It was in 65. I was 15. Let's see. I had been kicked out of Lincoln for breaking a guy's jaw with a rifle butt during ROTC. And then I got kicked out of Franklin for throwing a guy through the window because his girlfriend liked me, and he was the fullback on the seniors. And then I went to Marshall. And the first or second day, I snuck in a small 18, 20-inch guitar, snuck it in a duffel bag, put it in my locker, went upstairs during the lunch break to smoke some pot and play, and there were two teachers up there jamming and smoking. So I thought, I'm in the right school. And Lance Ito used to smoke pot there.
Oh, wow.
That's right. Lance
the judge.
Ito. The judge in the butcher's trial.
So...
Oh, did I say judge out loud? Can I say that on the air?
That's cool. So, before you had a band, did you write a song when you were playing by yourself?
No, I didn't start writing until 67. And the first band I was in was with Donatas Blazevich, or Danny Blazes, and Vitas Sekulauskas, or Vito, or Vic. He was a drummer. Danny was a guitar player, bass player, songwriter. I was a bass player, guitar player, singer. And Danny had some crazy songs like... Hospital, I like it. And then, everybody's here because they like football. Everybody here is having a ball. And we had to do something. And then this one. It was a song about a sheep that couldn't find any clothes out in the jungle. Where do you live? Ungawa.
You didn't say bass before. When did you first play bass?
Oh, bass in 1960 when I was 10.
So the year after guitar, you play bass.
I started playing guitar and bass in 1960 within a month of each other, and the harmonica. I had a bag of 20 or 30 harps I carried around for 15 years. I used to be able to take any harp, play in any other key, bend the notes, anything. The same way that, like Norton Buffalo does.
Oh, yeah.
I was really good at it. And saxophone, barry, and tenor, and upright bass.
That's after?
Yeah, and when I'd go home with that bass, they wouldn't let me take it on the bus, so I'd carry it all the way home playing it. I would hook the bass into my jeans and play it all the way home.
Wow. Did you play stand-up before you played a bass guitar?
Yeah. We didn't have any money.
Well, where'd you find the stand-up bass? Oh, it was the schools.
Yeah. Is that your phone ringing, Matt?
Yeah.
Was that one of your phony friends?
So is that how you got into music then, through the school?
No, through my older brother had a
your
band.
Brother.
And they used to do like a... Bo Diddley.
Yeah.
I'm sorry... Yes, I'm sorry, baby. I'm sorry.
Now,
for the things I've said to you. And then years later, I saw the Lobos playing that in 1980. But my older brother had a band called The Relations. Now, that was when there'd be like 10 bands at the Lincoln High School Auditorium, at the Lincoln Park Auditorium.
Yeah.
Which they have two of the new ones now. And there'd be like a head on like Cannibal the Headhunters, or Ronnie and the Pomona Casuals, or the Standells under a different name, or Frank Zappa under a different name. Remember that song, Memories of El Monte? That was Frank Zappa.
Wow.
And his old band. So My older brother's band would be like somewhere in the middle because they were a good band, but every band would do the same set because that's all they knew, you know.
Right.
But my older brother's band, they kind of frowned on, but they kind of liked it because they did about 5 originals. The only band that did any originals except for the ones that had records out.
The guy who wrote Football.
No. Oh, no. This is my older brother.
Oh, that was your band.
My older brother band I'm talking about. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I was in a dumb band called Steamroller. And 5 years later, guess who joined that band?
Who?
After I had left a couple years later. Peter Case.
Oh, wow.
So I'm in San Francisco, and my friend Chuck Prophet is opening up for Peter Case, the Chuck Prophet and his band.
Sure.
And the Creatures of Habit.
Green,
I wonder what kind of habit he used to have. And so Chuck is opening up, and my friend Max Butler is playing the band. And Peter's a headliner. He's playing by himself.
Right.
So Chuck says, I'm not putting you on the list. I'll get in trouble. I'm going to be able to play there again. So I go to the door, and the guy there goes, Carl, we wish you could come in and play, but if we let you in, we're going to get in trouble. So then Peter comes walking by. I go, hey, Peter, they won't let me in. He goes, fuck that, come on. So he got me in, and we're sitting back there. And so everybody panics. This is when I was still drinking and acting stupid.
Yeah.
And everybody panics when I walk in, like, oh, my God, who let him in? And so, in fact, once Chuck Prophet, he was trying to break the ice with the Lobos. He opened up a show somewhere for him. And he walks in the dressing room. They look at him like, what are you doing here? And he says, you and I have one, you guys, you have, and I have one thing in common. Like, they're trying to figure out, what is this guy talking about? He goes, Carlos Guitaros. And they all started laughing. So anyway, so I'm backstage with Peter before the bands go on. And somebody says, what's the first band you were ever in? I said, a band called Seymour. He goes, I was in that band. I go, with Danny Blazes? Yeah. We pick up guitars. And all these people are standing around like an E.F. Hutton fucking commercial or something, right? They're standing around listening to what we're saying and just amazed that I'm not choking anybody yet. And we both know the words and the chords to Football and Hospital and Oomba Oomba Rasa. And we're playing these songs and they're looking at us like we're nuts.
Wow.
So that was really fun.
Because of your brother and his band.
My elder brother had a band, too.
Getting you into music.
That's how I got into music.
You took music into school.
A little bit, yeah. But I always had to sit out the classes because I could read something and get it the first time and not have to read it anymore after that.
Uh-huh.
Just look at the shape and the time distance
without
having to think about it the way he wanted me to think about it, one bar at a time. Just look at it and know where everything was and play it.
Yeah.
So after 2 weeks, the class was still on the first page, and I was through the whole book or something. So he just let me do it that way and gave me a passing grade. But he would get mad at me when I'd pretend like I was playing by reading. I was, but just once is all I needed.
Yeah, right.
So I was pretty lucky that way. That was Mr. Lee at Nightingale.
Okay, when do you start writing songs?
1967.
And that's not Steamroller.
No.
It's your own band, right?
Yeah, my own songs, yeah.
Oh, but you don't have your own band yet.
I didn't need one.
Oh.
I could play bass, rhythm, and fills all at the same time. Yeah, and I had a bass drum, I had a hi-hat, and I had everything all around me on my elbows. I was gone.
Whoa.
I had stuff sewn into a pair of pants and crashing like that while I was playing.
Yeah.
All kinds of things.
Oh, man.
My first song was called Running Roads. It reminded me of like a movie where you're going down a winding road, but it's sped up.
Yeah.
It goes like this.
Stop action.
I haven't played this for 20 years, so I didn't even remember it. Sound like the Minutemen. That was the whole song.
Whoa.
That's the first song I ever wrote.
It's called
Running Roads. The second one was a samba. Why do you show your way? Tell me why.
Your first lyrics?
Yeah, yeah. Why do you shy away from me? Is it something you want me to be? Tell me now, for I must go. Tell me now, Ripple Show. Why do you shy away? Tell me, why do you shy away? Why do you shy away? Just like a jazz song.
Sure. Now, what were the gigs like? Was there a club scene?
Not that I knew of. We just played for our friends.
So like Kegger's Backyard?
Yeah, yeah,
garage.
Stuff like that, yeah. But I could go into Hollywood and get up and play almost anywhere, because I was a persistent pest.
What was the scene like then?
Well, you could see Canned Heat at the Bialitos, where I met Johnny Legend the first time. I reminded him of it, and he said, and he pulls out his Bialitos card, which he has in plastic. You had to be a member to get in. I wasn't old enough to even be a member, but on the Saturday Night Jam, at like midnight till 3 or 4 in the morning, I could go there, wait in the hall of the kitchen when I was trying to play, get on stage, then after I played, get off and go stand in the hall and look through the door. But I couldn't hang out in the club.
This is in the 60s.
Yeah, like 65, 66. And I was 15, 16. And the Sea Witch was going. It became North Beach Leather. It was right next to Dino's on the Strip, just past La Cienega.
Sure.
And every Saturday night, my friend Art Chapa. Art Chapa had long hair, about 600-800 records, great system in his house back in 64, right? So every Saturday night, he and I would walk from where the Glendale Freeway meets Glendale Boulevard.
Yeah.
We'd walk down to Sunset, along Alvarado down to Sunset. And we'd walk on the north side of Sunset all the way past the whiskey to the Hamburger Hamlet, right where the...
That's a hoof.
And then we'd cross the street and walk all the way back with a couple of crummy, crummy ragweed joints.
Yeah.
It looked like green paint scraped off of a school wall.
And we
thought we were cool. And he had a little transistor radio, and I had an acoustic guitar without a strap. I didn't know you could have a strap, you know. So we'd walk every Saturday. We'd do this as our little thing, you know. We'd get sodas. We had enough money. Usually we didn't. And so one time we're listening to Carol A. We're listening to. I bought the law and the law won. I bought the law and the law won. Something like that. And but then the sound started echoing. And then it started distancing, like, I pop, the law, farther apart.
Doppler effect.
Yeah, well, and then we realize, and then this door opens, and all of a sudden, there's Bobby Fuller playing on stage live on KRLA, and we got him on the radio. We turn off the radio, and for about 5 minutes, the doors open, and I'm jamming. And I knew all the chords and everything. I knew the whole album. And I didn't have any records when I was growing up. I had two or three. But
so did you watch people? Did you have guitar players?
Oh, every time I'd go to Art's house, I'd learn 10, 15 songs. And I could hear a song and play it. Even if I was talking to you and the radio's going, I'd pay attention over there, pay attention over there. And then I could play the song, like, immediately. I could still play whatever I hear.
So you built your ear up early.
I moved the wax over, yeah. What? Pop.
So how many songs have you written now?
Wait a minute. You have a mat over there near your door and it says, "Hi, I'm Matt," with like one T?
Yeah.
That's terrible.
You can't even spell Matt.
Okay, was there a difference between the 60s scene and the 70s?
Matt, who is that guy talking to me?
It's Watt from Pedro.
What? What?
How did the scene change?
Does anybody know that when they call you, you don't know if you're in a bat, you go, what? I thought, what did I do?
It's the way I grew up. Everybody answered the phone with their last name.
It's because you play so loud. That's why.
Oh, you mean the volume.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh. So you can't even hear me. So were you going to ask me some serious question?
Yeah.
So there I was walking down Sunset.
Yeah. And then the 70s come, and now you're on Sunset.
The 70s come. No, yeah. I didn't go to Sunset. The 70s came. Yeah. I used to go to the lingerie, but it was called the Red Velvet Club in 1965.
Okay.
And Pat and Lolly Vegas used to be there. Later on, Pat and Lolly Vegas had this song. Come and get your love. Come and get your love.
Redbone.
That
like
one,
Redbone, that Indian.
Yeah,
band.
Yeah, yeah. So they used to play there, but they had suits on, like if they were from Vegas, you know. I could go to that jam too. And I used to go to the jam at Ciro's, that place where now it was called the Comedy Store after that. Ciro's, it's on Sunset. It's where Sammy Davis Jr. made his big splash in Variety before and after his accident. When he lost his eye, and they went to put his eye back in, but they gave him a better ear. The guy was, he was actually good.
So you're walking in just jamming on open nights.
Yeah, well, everybody knew me. They couldn't keep me out.
Okay.
So I went with.
You didn't put a band together, huh?
I didn't need one. I could play by myself.
I wasn't there. You have to tell me these
things. Who is that guy talking to me, Matt? So, what? Oh, okay. So,
by the 70s, you start playing with bands.
So. Yeah, 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 yeah. I traveled all over the country with bands then.
So that's what you were doing in the 70s.
Yeah.
Here you left L.A.
Stuff like over in Vegas. You're from Orlando and this stuff. All kinds of crap.
Did you like touring?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'd always make sure I was in a Variety band. Do you have to go to the bathroom, Tina?
No, I don't. Thank you.
What do you mean by
Variety?
You
gonna go suck on a cigarette?
Yeah.
What do you mean by Variety?
Smart girl. Well, nowadays, now back in the 65.
Yeah.
There was a station called KBLA, 1500. Now it's a news station, I think, like KFWB is. It's KFWB, KRLA, and KBLA was. But KBLA came in and really ripped it up. On the same station, you could hear Brother Matt Tolkien. You could hear, are you eating? Stop eating.
I mean by Variety, they play a variety of.
Right, right. On the same station, you could hear Mantovani, yeah. Odetta. Some B.B. King, Muddy Waters, Frank Sinatra, Stones, Beatles, Trini Lopez, any of the good folk groups.
What was touring like? It wasn't as many one-nighters, right? You would.
Yeah, you'd be somewhere for a week at a Holiday Inn or some kind of crap, yeah.
How did you travel around?
Car.
Cars in those days?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Station wagons if you had enough money.
So what about station wagons? Yeah, I heard about like country bands toured that way. So it wasn't really a van scene. There wasn't a bus scene yet. It was cars and station wagons.
You're going to stuff yourself in a little Volkswagen van.
No, I'm talking about Big Econoline.
In 1965?
They actually had them, but
Big
they were Econoline really small.
Were actually small.
Yeah, they were like Falcons.
You ever seen a 1960 Econoline?
Absolutely.
It looks like a...
It's on a Falcon wheelbase.
Looks like a small cab in a... Japan.
And then the motors in the middle, it's Bogart and Hamilton.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was hot. I didn't like those.
Yeah.
So we used to travel on the country and play like a blues or some rock and roll or jazz or oldies, folk, country, all kinds of stuff. You could do more stuff.
And you wouldn't do just one set, right?
No, you'd play the whole night, like 4 or 5 sets.
Yeah.
And they give you rooms. Now, KBLA did that. They'd play like 7 songs, and there'd be 7 different styles of music.
Right.
Nowadays, the kids are cut short because if you're learning and you and your friends are listening to your favorite station, well, you're listening to a rock station that has only one type of rock.
Absolutely.
Not like 10 different kinds and other kinds of music.
Yeah, I know what
so
you mean.
So I learned a lot of stuff. I learned about my chords and scales.
Well, Art, some of it was from the radio, some from Art.
Yeah.
Said that every time you went to Art's house, you learned 15. Oh,
I was always over there. He had horrible weed too. Back
that's
then,
why you
man.
Learned.
That's how you learned. I don't want to smoke any more weed. Let me play some music. Nowadays, it's dude. Where's my guitar? I think you're holding it. Oh, thanks.
Well, now here's where I come in a little bit because I know Top Jimmy. He was working at that place on the taco stand. When did you meet him?
The off Sunset became a strip joint.
Right.
It was kind of just up and across from A&M Records. And when Paul Williams was waiting for checks, he used to feed him, too. He got his name Tom Taco because he'd buy a sack of beans every month and a bunch of tortillas, and he'd feed them to the punk rock kids.
Yeah.
And they had just, you know, they couldn't hang out, but he'd feed them. That's how he got the name Top Taco Jimmy.
Yeah.
And then Sarah, this manager sort of person that we had, and her and Jimmy just take our money and buy drugs, you know. I never knew we were getting paid.
No, but where did you meet Jimmy?
I met Jimmy, my friend I met in San Francisco in 1970, Mark Frere, a bass player. He was playing with Jimmy. Jimmy got a band together. It was Mark Frere on bass, Tim West on guitar, great guitar player, Kent Henry from Steppenwolf on the other guitar with really great tone, and Jerry Posen on drums, who was the producer and trumpet player on the song Tighter and Tighter by the band called Higher and Higher.
Yeah.
Come on, just a little bit tighter. 1971, number one hit. So Jerry was a drummer, and they had this band, but they were doing like twin guitar solos, and Jimmy, they really didn't want that stuff, you know. So it's just something more rough. So Mark brings him to the Hong Kong one night. Jimmy says, let's drive me to the Hong Kong. There's beers that the people aren't watching. No, really.
Okay.
First time I met Jimmy at the end of the night. Oh, so my friend introduces me, Mark Frere, the bass player, introduces me to Jimmy, and he goes, this is Top Jimmy, and this is Top Taco Jimmy, and this is Carlos Guitarlos. He makes it up on the spot.
Ah, that's where you get the name.
Yeah, it just stuck, because I've
you
always
got
had
the name the night you met Top Jimmy.
Yeah, and I always had a guitar in my hand, whether I was in court, at the store, on a train, on a plane, hitchhiking, sure. Sleeping.
Can we back up a little? How did you find out about the Hong Kong?
We used to kind of babysit him. His mom would go to the store. This is 1958, 9. He was about 4, 3 or 4, 5. I was 7, 8 or 9. And we'd play on the streets with a golf ball, with a bunch of tennis balls, a bunch of
rubber band
socks wrapped. Cut tape, till it was a ball that was soft enough to play in the street, but not really going to break any windows much, unless it was a house window. We'd play in the streets all the time on Merced Street in Cypress Park, just below Isabel. And Dave Drive, you know him?
Yeah.
Dave
Drummer
Fernandez, yes. Yeah. His brother Mario, his cousin Mario was the coach at the Popular Playground. Now it's a Cypress Park Recreation. So Dave was a lot younger. So we used to kind of watch him. Will you watch Dave when I go to the store? He'll just be in the yard. I've locked the side gate. Okay. So he'd always come out in the street. We'd always have to put him back. It was a hassle, you know, and he's a little brat. So what happened was one day my brother says, it was like a big playoff game in the streets, right? It was like 3 out of 4, 2 out of 3. It was the last game, or it was the ninth inning. And he kept coming outside of the gate under the street. My brother says, hang on. He runs upstairs, and he comes back with this chocolate bar. He goes, I'll give you these two chocolate bars if you stay in the yard. Okay. So he eats two chocolate bars. All you need is one or two little pieces, because it was X-lax.
So he blew his brains
out. Ed blew his brains again, shit coming out of his ears.
And that's how you found out about the Hong Kong.
No, and then you've been years, and then years later, yeah, and I slid all the way to the Hong Kong, yeah.
Slip and
slide. I'm in lava. I was in the lava lounge. So then later, on your Dave, I've known Dave since I was like 7 or 8.
Right.
And he still lives in Cypress Park. And so he was saying, he'd come by my house, man, how come you're not playing? You're the only guy who knows who actually knows how to play, blah, 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 blah. He goes, I know all these guys, this band X and the Go-Go's, and they only know 3 songs, but they're, you know, and then everybody's over here at this place called The Mask. I said, well, I don't want to go somewhere where I got to show everybody how to play. I don't want to do that. So he says, well, come down to the Hong Kong. So I went to the Hong Kong, and Dennis True, a big, big, big guy, I talked my way in the back door. He goes, you're the only guy that's ever talked his way in here. You want to work here? So then I was the back door man at the fucking Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And so one night, this guy comes up the stairs with this Mark that I've known all my life. So I said, come on in.
You got the gig the first time you went there.
Yeah. So I
because Dave says check this place out.
Well, because I was a big guy. When I was 12, I was ball of muscles, a bulldog.
Right.
You know, playing football, you had to catch me and then fight me all the way across the field as I drug 2 or 3 guys. I was an animal.
Okay, okay.
So I didn't always look like
though.
Brother Matt. And so, just because I was big and I talked my way in and I bullshitted him and I gave him shit, he let me in.
Wow.
And then he asked me if I wanted to work. So I was the backdoor man there at the Hong Kong, and my friend Mark comes in the back door one night. I go, okay, Mark, come on in, but just keep it cool, you know. I'll act like I don't see you. So next thing, I go into the other room. This is the back room of the Hong Kong. I go into the main room where the bands are. I look around like I'm working. I go back in, and this guy, Top Jimmy, has picked up every beer, put it on a table, empty or not, and he's drinking them. Drinking every one, every drink, every cocktail, every drink, everything. And the last one, right? It's full. You can tell it's full when he picks it up. And his eyes finally open and they light up. Yeah, yeah! You know? And so he starts drinking it. And he goes, you hear it falling in like it's going into an empty barrel, you know? Barrel chested singer, full of beer. Roll out the barrel. So he's going, then he goes, then he goes, and he spits out about 5 cigarettes and about 100 pounds of cigarette tobacco, and it hits the wall, and it goes, and there's butts on the wall, stuck in beer floating, and Bob is thrown down the wall. I go, fuck.
I got to get in a band with this guy.
So I go over, and I go, hey, man. I get a towel from the kitchen. I go, hey, man, I pour some water on the wall down there, lapping it up and squeezing it into a thing. I hand it to him. He doesn't want to drink it, you know. And so he goes, Carlos, this is Top Jimmy, and this is Carlos. Then he makes up a name, Carlos Catarlos. And then later on, Jimmy wasn't too happy with his band, so he said, well, I've been hanging out with Carlos a little bit, and he's pretty cool, and he can play all these songs. You don't even have to rehearse them. And I don't want to rehearse with you guys. So, you know, you just got to do them. So, all 4 of my friends said, no, don't get it. I'm making the sign of the cross with my fingers. And my finger with, you know, he goes, don't put him in the band. No, help. No, what are you doing? You're crazy. You'll never get a gig. This is before I even had a bad reputation. I was just a pest then. And so back in 1965, though, to back it up, 65, 66 summer, the Hullabaloo After Hours, which is the Nickelodeon now, right across from Motown Catty Corner.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to hang out in that lot, and I saved Rodney's life there once. The Rebels, this Hollywood gang, the Rebels, they just dealt weed, a little bit of speed. They were lightweight kids, about 20. I was like 16. Rodney was probably 103. And he had long hair and, you know, high high water pants, the Cholos called them. And big beetle boots and big corduroys, like an inch thick corduroy.
Yeah.
and the big belt with a big buckle with something on it,
Udon noodle.
And the shirt and the Sonny and Cher vest with the fur, you know, and everything and the high white collars off of a striped shirt.
Yeah,
the collars, you know,
looking pretty slappable.
Yeah, and so these guys want to stab him and kick
just
his ass.
Just for that look.
They want, yeah, just for the look. And they came up, so they're starting to surround him. And
what did they wear?
They just wore like greaser clothes, you know, jeans and greaser, you know, boots, just like lightweight motorcycle guys.
Yeah.
And so I go over and I go, hey, what are you guys doing? And he goes, we're going to kick this baggage's ass. And the guy pulls out a knife and goes, I'm going to stab him. I grab and I turn it, but he was the biggest guy. So if you stop the biggest guy for a minute, the rest of us are going to see what's going on. You go to the smallest guy, they all jump on you. So I went to the biggest guy and took the knife and twisted his hand down.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to let go. I had control of him for a minute. And I'm talking to him, and I let go easy. And I'm saying, no, that guy's got more girlfriends than all of you put together. You know, come on. You know, he wants to be a radio guy. He knows all the bands that come through. You can meet the bands through him. Oh, really? You mean like the Standells or something? I go, yeah, he knows the Dave Clark, he knows everybody. So they let him go.
Whoa.
Yeah, so I saved his life once. So anyway, there, at the Hullabaloo After Hours, it was a load-in and a sound check about 5 in the afternoon. It started at 2 in the morning, 2 till 7, for like $2. And it was Dave Hall, the Hullabalooer, from KRLA, who one night when it was crowded said, well, let's all give a hand signed show of appreciation to the fire marshal for making you get out of the aisle. 400 kids gave those guys the fingers.
Did you ever go to Gazzari's for the Real Don Steele?
No, but I used to go there. I played there with Steamroller.
Okay, because he was big on the radio too. AM radio.
Yeah. AM. It wasn't FM then.
Yeah, that's right.
So anyway, David Lindley is loading in.
Oh wow.
Because he's going to play with Kaleidoscope.
I bought my first bass amp from Kaleidoscope.
Yeah, well, Kaleidoscope. They were like about an eight piece band. They were all good players.
Yeah, yeah.
Really amazing stuff. Sitars.
Yeah, kind of psychedelic. Bags. I bought a Vox AC-50.
Yeah,
that was my first bass.
So he's loading in, and I stop him at the door. Hey, you know what's going to be? I'm going to show you. I pull out one of his guitars, and because mine wouldn't tune up right, and I pull it, and he's looking at me like, oh, my God, what do I do? And I start playing the song. He goes, no, it's like this. I kept him there for like 45 minutes to an hour, picking his brain. And I had all the right questions. I knew what I was doing. I just wanted to know immediately.
Right.
So I ran into him about two or three months ago at the – I've seen him since. But I ran into three. I reminded him of that day about two or three months ago. I reminded him of it at the McCabe's. He played a solo show by himself. Just like one long set. And afterwards, he's talking to Jackson Brown. I met him before. So we're all talking after everybody's gone. And I said, do you remember me? He goes, yeah, you were in Top Jimmy and Biggie. He goes, yeah, I remember you guys at Jackson Brown. We did a homeless benefit at the Palace once, and Jackson Brown gave me his guitar to play the solo instead of him on the last song written by Martin Anzoni about homeless people. Anyway, it was a big thing, big deal. Anyway, so he goes, I go, no. From the Hullabaloo. And I'm starting to say it. 1965, you were playing with Kaleidoscope. I stopped you at the... And he goes, you stopped me at the door and you wouldn't let me go for an hour. he remembered it. He goes, that was you? He goes, I still remember you. Because, you know, he sees this kid being inquisitive and he's asking the right questions.
Right.
So he puts up with it for an hour or so, you know.
Right. Up to the Rhythm Pigs now. Top of Jimmy Diggs you because you don't need rehearsal.
Well, because I don't care what the fuck he's doing anyway, kind of thing.
Okay. You guys start playing gigs.
Yeah.
Got in with the Blasters, the X Crowd. That's where a lot.
Well, Jimmy was kind of their roadie, illustrious leader, drug distributor.
Mule.
Yeah, remember, don't ever go to a game with a baseball game with Brother Matt. unless you need a shower for 3 hours. So, so we started doing some gigs. Our first set had like Merle Haggard. Sometimes I think I might leave, and I want to leave a little trouble behind. The Working Man's Blues.
Sure.
And Howlin' Wolf. Do the Do. And some of my songs, Dance With Your Baby. Dance with your baby now. And
who was in that first version?
In the first version, it was me and Jimmy, and for about 3-4 months, it was a whole bunch of guys. We even had Brendan playing the trumpet and harmonica.
Oh, I remember him playing at maybe a whiskey gig or something.
Yeah, getting up and falling over drunk. one of our first gig at the Hong Kong, it was Johnny Doe on bass, me on guitar, Steve Smith on drums, some guy named Steve Smith. He looked like a DEA agent. And Lee being on the harp with a big old Marshall and a harp. And Xene would sing a little bit. Johnny would sing. Xene used to sing Slippin' and Slidin' with me, the Richard Penniman song. Slippin' and sliding, keepin' and hiding. Been told a long time ago. Slippin' and sliding. And she sang a little bit with Jimmy on some other songs. But we also had Brendan would get him to play harp or trumpet or something. And right before Xene came up to sing, there was this guy sort of at an angle in front of this little Hong Kong stage, passed out drunk. People were stepping over him. He was kind of like, here's the stage, level at you. Then at an angle, is that 45 degrees?
Yeah.
He was at an angle. And Brendan gets so drunk with his trumpet that he falls over, and his last note, when his trumpet hits this guy on the floor, goes, and it hits the guy, and the trumpet cuts his mouth, and he knocks out, and he's like this X on the front of the stage.
That's technique.
And Xene steps over them and sings. She didn't want to sing, and then she saw it, she goes, look, an X! And she steps over them and got him to sing with
me. You know what I always wondered about that band is, what about recording? You guys just never thought about recording?
Well, I just, you know who Mark Lynette is?
No.
Well, one of the first projects he did was Translator with Steve Berlin.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
A band from Briscoe, 1981 or 80.
Yeah, New Wave kind of thing.
Yeah. And he had done mixing since the 70s and stuff like that, Mark Lynette. But he and Steve have gone on to become, like, real big deals, especially Mark. Now, Mark just did the entire Beach Boys catalog, and he did that Pet Sounds and Smile, that masterpiece.
Sure.
It's just finally out because Mark mixed it over at his house in up near the Verdugo College, whatever it is. And that's where we mixed my new record, which we should play something off of in just a minute.
Yeah, we're going.
And so we recorded it in 81. We recorded some more the end of 86 or the beginning of 87. We recorded three more songs at Rusk Studios on Highland or La Brea, right across from that pizza place that says, have you had a piece lately? just up from the Lava Lounge. That's La Brea, I suppose. So we recorded three songs there, which was Backroom Blues, but for God's sake, Brother Matt, it's Bathroom Blues. That was an intermenstrual. That's why we only play it once a month. And we also recorded a Hole in My Pocket. I've got a hole in my pocket. And we recorded that Dylan song. Ballad of a Thin Man. And then it was mixed and released like years later, like then, in like beginning of 88.
But that's the 86 recording. What was recorded in the 81 one?
The first part of Pickus Drunkus Maximus, except for the last three songs, which we recorded later. We were like too crazy to go on and do anything with it. So it was released in 88, beginning of 88, end of 87.
Because you know all them punk bands were putting out 45s and everything, and you guys just would not put out records.
Who cares?
Oh, well, okay. That's my answer then. I know a lot.
I have enough songs to put out a record a week.
Oh, yeah, I know.
For like the next 2 years.
But the point was, you didn't at that time. Because you were in the moment. You're playing live, right?
That's what we did, yeah. Now this new record, one day I called up Craig Parker Adams. And he said, I said, he said, who's this? I go, This is Handsome Los, Carlos Handsome Los. And he thought I said Handsome Wolf. So he wants to call this new record Handsome Wolf. And he's talked Gary Leonard into putting up on the Los Angeles in the Palace Theater downtown on Broadway in L.A., near 4th Street. You know, on both of them, on all the marquees now, it'll say Now Playing. And then it'll say Carlos Guitarlo's Handsome Wolf. That, you know, we'll use that in the, somewhere on the record. Anyway, so we what?
So what I thought you said at first.
Yeah. So we careful, Matt. Once your stomach starts digging when you're laughing, it'll never stop. So we're gonna. So we did this live record in the studio. Yeah. Joey from the Rhythm Pigs.
Sure.
Played drums. I played guitar and sang. And Mike Hightower used to be the manager of Guitar Center for 13 years. Plays in a lot of blues bands all the time. He's been playing with me for about 2.5 years.
Rhythm guitarist.
Bass.
Is he the guy outside at Liquid Kitty?
Yeah. It was just a trio.
He's got a good sound.
Well,
you had some other cat come in on rhythm guitar.
Dig the Pig later.
That's right. And then Gil came on bass.
Yeah, and then Gil T.
Right, well, he was in the side. Yeah, he was like
he had to have his own half of the club to sit in. So, I mean, if you don't know Gil, he looks like a wall of chorizo.
He's playing great.
Yeah.
He's singing great, too.
Yeah, he moved back into town after 18 years.
Oh, he's going to live here now.
Yeah, he lives here. He moved down near Candy Cane to play in her band, but they started arguing over the per diem money. That last burger's mine. I think Gil told us something like, "Well, in my next life," they were arguing. You know, he sent emails after he quit, arguing something like, "Well, I hope in my next life," Gil said, "I hope I come back as your feet." And she goes, "Type, type, type. Why? Type, type, type." So you'll know. So you'll never see me again.
Oh, man.
And stuff like that. That's terrible.
Man, some low blow.
Did I say that out loud? Oh, my God, I did.
Out loud.
Candy's going to eat me.
Yeah.
So, we did this live record. I wrote 6 new songs for it. There's, I overdub Washboard on one song, and at the end I play another part.
Washboard,
yeah. And the first time I ever played one. And then
saw Jim play one.
And I overdubbed a solo on The Fool That I Am, and I, just in one little section, not a whole other guitar part. And I overdubbed on the end of one song, I overdubbed Phil's going out, some Motown sliding, Curtis Mayfield type of stuff. Oh, sorry. It's like this, huh? Against the rhythm. And other than that, it's completely live.
Wow.
And it was mixed by a great guy, Mark Lynette, who just mixed that masterpiece Smile. He mixed Dave Alvin the last couple of records, except for the newest one.
And he started with Steve Berlin. Wow.
Yeah, him and Steve Berlin.
I remember Steve when he first came on the scene.
Well, you know, Steve, it's kind of an oddity. Steve Berlin, you know, he's Jewish, right? So, now that was back when the Lobos all looked like the way Matt looks now.
Gordo,
yeah. So, like, all the
muscular.
Lobos were like, chunky guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And Steve Berlin was a pencil.
Yeah, he was.
Playing the saxophone.
And now it's the other, he's the Gordo.
And now they're all trim and he's the only fat Mexican left. And then the Lobos. Steve, stop that.
Take the hand.
I think he reminds him of being in a Rhythm Pig.
We're finishing up the first hour now, so we're going to move on to the second one. We'll talk some more, we'll play some songs, and then you're going to collaborate with Brother Matt on a jam.
Oh, my God. Okay, it's time to leave. No, play that straight from the heart.
We're going
to
do that. But
I rolled straight from the heart on one of my deathbeds. I can't remember which one. But
probably
one
the one
them.
Before we did that.
One of them.
And also, we didn't really finish up. How you finished up with Top Jimmy and stuff?
Well, Jimmy died.
Yeah, but you kind of stopped playing with him before that.
Yeah.
We'll get to that next hour.
Look, I almost died. Come on, guys.
Oh, I know.
Give me some press.
No.
Give me some press. I almost died more times than like Jimmy did, okay?
Yeah.
So I'm...
So more prop?
Yeah, I'm a little cooler amongst the idiots of the world. like Brother Matt and Mike Watt.
I am the biggest idiot.
You know, idiot number one. Okay. You know, I don't even have names for people anymore. The guys in my band, they're idiot number one, idiot number two, idiot number three. I got names. But
you got
a number.
Okay, hold tight for hour two. It's June 17, 2006. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro show.
Hard. Yes, I'm really trying. Thank you.
Dance with Your Baby live on the Brother Matt KXLU Blues Ship.
When did you meet Brother
20
Matt?
Years ago.
Was it at that?
Yeah, I guess you came around to the gigs or someone got a hold of you. Or
I seen you guys before and then I met you. I was sitting at a table with Big Joe Turner.
Must have been one big table. It was you and him at that table. Big Joe Turner at a big old table with Big Brother Matt.
And you guys played that night.
Where?
Music Machine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Music Machine, Big Joe Turner, yeah. It was a trip, because it was hard to hear, hard to understand what he was saying. But when he sat down and sing, man, that was what he was made to do.
Yeah, are you kidding?
That guy could totally sing.
What are you complaining about, Mike?
The microphone, because Brother Matt's fucking mic ain't working shit, because I got to get that fucking jack fixed.
Yeah, so I think you guys weren't playing any place regularly at that time, and so I said, well, you guys want to play on the radio? And then you guys came up and next week, and we did it that night at the Blue Shift, August 1st, 1985.
That was it?
Yeah. people thought I was crazy for having you guys up. Because, like, I guess Los Lobos Trash KPFK ones or the Circle Jerks. There were a few, like, notorious radio shows. And they were afraid that the station was going to get trashed. And everyone thought I was nuts. But
they thought we were going to run around and chase all those nuns?
There was mics falling down during the right before the break. It was like held together with duct tape and bubble gum.
You're fucking coming in through his daughter district.
1, 2.
Yeah, you got to talk.
Good. Gooseneck.
Somebody needs a nap.
That was when I met Carlos Guitarlos and the Rhythm Pigs.
Yeah, we played on your show 3, 4, 5 times, I guess.
Yeah, and you came up a whole bunch. It was cool. You just sit there.
I guess nobody wanted to go on your show, huh?
Here, let's talk about what we just played. We started the second hour off with Ain't That Loving You. Which
is from my CD, Straight From the Heart, which came out 3 years ago.
Right.
Which ended up on the front page of LA Times and 2 pages inside.
Yeah.
Now, Paul McCartney's record gets on the front page at the bottom of the paper, not page one, column one, at the bottom of page one. It'll go to the calendar section, right?
Right.
But not mine. And then on that song, Ain't That Loving You,
yeah,
you're on it, and so is Pete.
Yeah, Pete Mazich on organ.
Who plays in your trio.
Right, second man. I'm playing tonight with Orange County, and I'm playing tomorrow with them at 4 in the afternoon at the Echo in Echo Park, a barbecue.
So there's Dos, there's 3-3s. You have any 4-4s?
Not yet. I'm working on it.
Got to find 4 people who can play.
I remember when we recorded that song. Where were
we? It was out at Trend Coma, which is an acronym for Mark Doten.
Yeah.
Mark was in a Double Knot Spy Car, a great bass player.
Right.
Good arranger, great engineer, great mixer.
And
he also did my next record, which was Hell Can Wait, which is out now.
Right, we're going to play something from that. But did you just write that song before we recorded it? Or is that an oldie? Ain't That Loving You?
I wrote it about 6-7 months before.
Oh, so it was kind of recent.
Yeah. But I always write.
I remember you said, hey, let's try this Motown bass line. Show me the bass line.
Yeah, it's the one that you played, which is like a James Jamerson style.
Yeah.
Moving against a one, like this, which goes bum, 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 bum. So there's one, almost like a 4 to the one, but it's actually a 2-1. It goes bum, bum, bum. Now, if you do both parts at the same time, why did I even need you? It goes bum, 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 bum. I'm still tuning here.
What do you think about these bands these days that don't have bass players, that just drums and guitar? What do you think of that?
Well,
I mean, I'm saying that because you asked, why did you need me?
Oh,
No, there's people doing bands without bass guitars.
Yeah, it was a big deal about that White Stripe being recorded rough and raw. It was recorded nothing like the Led Zeppelin that some people have compared it to. Hell, Jimmy Page put 4 or 5 microphones, taped them together, put them right on top of his amp, put another 4 or 5 about 15, 20 feet away at the end of a long high hall. That's how he can get that sound, not without a bunch of outboard crap.
Oh, wow. It was on the mic.
Yeah, you know that song, Whole Lot of Love?
Yeah.
It was recorded. His amp was in the same hallway that Richie Valens sang Donna in. Which was where Mystic Sound was. Remember that hallway?
Sure, sure.
That hallway, when you get up the steps, the amp was at one end, the microphones were on top and at the other, and Richie Valens stood in that hallway to sing Donna.
Wow. I heard that he used a little Supro amp.
I don't know.
That's why I heard.
But I know kind of Marshall.
It was a little Supro.
Yeah, those things cook. Those things cook.
What's your favorite guitar?
Well, I've had maybe 100 guitars in my life since 1960. But my two favorite guitars was one that my brother had. He had a 56 Les Paul Jr. with a little double horns.
Like Johnny Thunder.
Yeah, yeah, a little burgundy one. And when I first met Caesar in 1970, he was really young. Caesar from the Lobos.
Sure.
He used to come over and try and buy it from my brother. My brother had a band called Free Road, and they were really, really good. They could all play and really sing. I mean, really sing good and play just great. So, because that was when I was just writing songs and staying at home. And my brother was gigging everywhere. And I like that. And I, on this new record I have, I took about 8 guitars of mine, and 3 belonged to my landlord, Tony, who's got some great guitars. And I didn't use anything but this little Les Paul Jr. that I just recently got.
Is it an old one?
With a little dog ear. No, but it sounds great.
Oh, the one we saw you at the club?
Yeah, yeah. The little thing screams. And that's the same amp I used on this new record. And all I used, the only effect I used was, well, I had to use a guitar chord. Sorry. I used a chord. I used a patch chord. I thought I was a purist.
Corrupt.
I'm totally corrupt. Yeah, I used a guitar chord, plug it into the amp. That's all I used on the new record. I used tremolo and reverb from the amp, and that was it. And it was mixed by Mark Lynette. But
you played Strats a long time.
Yeah, I played nothing but Strats.
Yeah.
My 59 got stolen, so a couple of years back, Flea bought me one.
Oh.
That was nice of him. He was going to play a benefit, but then the last minute he couldn't make it. He was going to Greenland to play for Molson Beer. It was one of their last unofficial gigs before they kind of broke up and nobody ever knew it.
Oh, wow.
And for about a year they didn't play, remember?
Yeah, I do. They've been up and down a lot.
Yeah. I remember when Anthony used to live in the outpost building where the Shoeshine place was. Right next to the pizza, just west of Las Palmas on Hollywood.
Yeah.
You know, where the Shoeshine place is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They always have it in movies. And he was the office right next to my ex-wife, Marilyn, who had her art studio there, and he was up in a little office. And, oh, in his new book, someone told me, he says, and I was living in an office at the Outpost building, and there was a young designer, he didn't mention her name, just talked about her, and he said, whose ornery boyfriend was Carlos Guitar.
You were ornery.
Ornery, yeah. I never picked him up and threw him. I used to do that to people. When I didn't get in a fight with them. I just pick them up and throw them. A big person, pick them up and throw them.
Okay.
It's like better than punching somebody. They don't want to get up and,
yeah, yeah,
and run after you.
Air mail.
Pick them up and throw them.
Air mail. After Ain't That Lovin' You, we played some more contemporary. Although that was contemporary. When did we do that? 3 or 4 years ago?
That was 3 years ago.
3 years ago.
Yeah, and
tell the story about it, too, because was after a hell ride, right? It was pretty near from a death call.
Oh, the Straight from the Heart?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I wrote Straight from the Heart on one of my deathbeds. I whispered the words into Marilyn's ear. Lord, would you have it? I whispered the words in her ear, and you couldn't hear it, so the nurse got on the other side in the other ear, and her head was hollow, so it echoed out loudly, and the nurse wrote the words down. No, I'm just joking. And anyway, and then when I woke up a couple of days later, after this heart thing, she had the guitar there and knew I wanted to play it. So I played it after I woke up, probably like, kind of like I was so out of it, you know.
You couldn't feel your fingers then, too. Huh?
Can you see this one?
Read between the lines.
This is the line. Brother, duh.
Okay, so we played a Sonic Youth cover, Bull in the Heather, something new from Go Team. We played new with Sonic Youth, Jams, Run.
You know, there's only 2 things wrong with that Sonic Youth album.
Yeah.
1, I'm not playing on it, and 2, they're not doing any of my songs.
And then we had a band from Tokyo called the No People doing Paper Cut Girl.
What are they called?
They were called the No People, N-O.
Remember that band from Pasadena called the Bee People?
Yeah.
They used to play gigs with Lawndale, with Lawndale and Johanna.
Kind of arty.
kind of artsy
like
fartsy,
Roxy, music.
No, like Roxy Muzak. Now, now, someone then had a, what was that first little, the first synthesizer board that had stackable banana clips?
Moog?
No, no.
Art?
No, I forgot. That little guy who was in the dinosaurs.
Oh.
Jail somebody helped.
He had one. I thought you wanted to know the name of the synthesizer.
Yeah, also. Yeah. No, the name of the synthesizer. I used to. Anyway, that, those were really great.
I remember that scene, Monitor. There was those bands. Yeah. That were, they weren't really rocking. They were more into, well, they were art students, a lot of them.
Yeah, from Pasadena College.
Yeah, you would talk to them, or Cal Arts.
And the rest were from Lawndale, so, you know, there's nothing happening there.
They're big.
It's kind of like Pedro.
Surf. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, they were like a serpent. In fact, Dave Lawndale,
the drummer, runs Liquid Kitty.
Runs the Plastic Titty.
Is that what you call it?
Yeah. Well, no. Well, when I'm there, I'll hold up a tip jar and I'll go, "Welcome to the Empty Kitty." And then, since I'm kind of big, and I tell him, "Oh, we need money. This is a tit jar, not a tip jar. I need a breast reduction."
So we didn't get to finish up on how you finished up with Top Jimmy.
About 1988, we toured the country and came back, and everybody went their separate ways, and then Jimmy died.
Yeah.
He died in 2001. And I was in San Francisco all those years.
Yeah, but, because you just passed through the whole 90s by doing that. But in the 90s is important because you're not in L.A., you're up in San Francisco.
Yeah, but that's
in fact, interesting gig, because that's right in front of BART station.
Because that's where my daughter was.
Oh.
That's why I went up, the only reason I went up. She just moved in with me for the next month and a half. Then she's going to New York to be at the Neighborhood Playhouse. It's like a big deal theater school in New York.
Oh.
So I'll be broke the next 2 years.
But your San Francisco sojourn.
Oh, I played in bands for a while, but it was like Austin, like 80 bands for one gig.
Right, right.
And nobody gets paid. So I started playing on the streets with a little mouse or a crate. A lot of money playing on the streets. Now, it was good. The most I ever made, I made $1,271.22. And I know because my daughter
and her, in
like 2 45-minute sets playing on the street at the Haight-Ashbury Street Fair. So I'm playing every 60 song that I know. We skip a lot from Dango. And, you know. I bought the low and the low one. I bought the low and the low one.
They never found his body, huh?
Yeah, they found his body. Bobby Fuller. Yeah, they just stuffed him full of gasoline because he owed money to the mob.
That's what. Okay. I thought he just disappeared. But they did find him, huh?
Well, his body stuck around, but his spirit disappeared.
Yeah.
And, so with Jimmy, let's see, Jimmy. I was in San Francisco playing on the streets, and you can make money, and it was legal. I got a ticket once, and right before I left, they were going to make me the arts commissioner.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was still playing the streets, and make me the arts commissioner. And give me a city plaque and all that crap.
Did you play in front of BART stations?
Yeah, I play in front of BART stations, this is like, if I wanted to make, like, on a Friday, if I wanted to make, like, $500-$600... Or else, in one day, or else more. If I had CDs, I could make $700 a day on a Friday during the summer, because I'd play from 6:30 till 9 downstairs on the BART station with an acoustic. Of course, I'd be sitting on my amp, have it backwards, have a contact pickup, not on the face of the acoustic, but on the back, with the wire going behind me into the amp, and a coat, and the amp facing backwards, and the amp would be just slightly louder than the guitar itself was. So the cops didn't know.
Right, right.
And my voice was like, bang, in a BART station.
Sure.
It was like the Big Bang Theory.
So they
couldn't tell because I was so loud with my voice.
Sure.
So I'd have an amp down there, and I'd make like 80, 90 bucks, sell 4 or 5 CDs, make 150 maybe. Let's just say 100, 120. And then I'd have to always have two amps, one charging in the room. Unless I left the area, then I'd take them both charged. And then I'd go back to my room, charge the amp, go eat breakfast, come back at 11:30, I would head downtown on the BART, get off at Montgomery or Powell. Now, if it's Powell, and if you get Powell in the summer, you can make, in 2 hours, you can make like $300 or $400. Wow. If you have CDs, you could always make that.
Was there competition with other buskers?
Oh, yeah.
To get heavy.
Yeah. How did you
handle that? Like the technique you used as a doorman?
No. If I wanted it on a Saturday,
yeah.
I'd get there at 5 in the morning.
So you would
and wait till 9 to start playing. I'd have
early.
2 amps.
Yeah.
I could play for 7-8 hours. So I could play from 9 till 5.
So whoever
and then go
first,
charge
no
and eat dinner.
No problem if you got there early.
Yeah.
Nobody ever muscles you out.
Oh no. But I always had a guitar neck to fend off robbers. Once this guy went reached for the money, I knew he was gonna do it. I timed it. I perfectly got the thing and went wham, and I broke his finger right in the box.
So this is a neck.
And then two or three homeless guys jumped him and got him. So the cops came because I knew that I'd always pay them like $10 to catch somebody that stole my money.
Right. But you had a guitar neck without a body.
Yeah, just to whack people. I'm serious.
Yeah, no.
Oh, I was kind of skinny and fucked up.
San Francisco was to go where your daughter was.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Because you didn't know, did you know about there was a bus scene like that?
And I went there in 1970 for the first time.
Yeah.
And my friend Mark Frere, who introduced me to Top Jimmy, a bass player.
Sure.
Mark Frere, he's the first musician I met in San Francisco. 864-1560 was the musician switchboard number, 415. And it turned out he lived like a block away.
But from the Union Hall?
From where I was.
Oh, from where you were.
So we'd get together and play. And we had this little pig nose amps, two of them.
Yeah.
And we put them in a little radio flyer wagon. We'd drive his car down there, park. We'd get the wagon, the two lamps. We'd put the amps in the wagon at each end, you know, for separation.
Of course.
And we'd sit on the ground and play right there at the cable car turnaround.
Oh, wow.
Which I did in the 90s.
In the 90s.
And we'd play there and make money. For science.
You actually got hip to this in the early 70s.
In 1970.
So you come back and revisit.
And it was going strong. So on a Friday I'd play or any day I wanted I could play in the morning at the BART 6:30 till 9, go in charge for 2 hours or so while I'm eating breakfast, and then go downtown to Market Street, one of three or four places, and during the lunch hour play from noon till 1:30, and then if there was a festival in the summer go there with the other man, and a little early and go charge and go out at night two or three times. But then, I'd go home and charge both amps now. I charge the second one. Then I'd take both amps and go play the rush hour going home in one of the same spots, or my original spot, but not downstairs, the morning spot, but upstairs with the amp facing backwards so it would echo off a wall.
Sure.
And I'd be sitting on the amp covering it up. And then I'd go out at night from... I could catch the dinner crowd from 8 to 10 and then have another amp ready to go in the neighborhood of 16th and Mission, Valencia and Mission, where all the hefters were after the Vanity Fair article.
Can I ask you something? I mean, you work the streets, you work the clubs, you play incredible, and you got this command of all these songs. Did you ever check out the studio scene, the sideman scene? The session
well,
man.
I can walk in and play your songs better than you can, but I don't want to do that. Swordfish trombone? Yeah, I played on that. It was supposed to be the number 2 record of all time, according to Spin, for its content, not its sales. I play guitar on that. But I'm sure it's sold. I'm sure it's still selling.
How were those sessions?
Oh, that was good, because I knew Tom. He used to come play with us on Mondays at the Café de Grand. Tom Waits. And
he was from the troubadour scene in the 70s.
You know what? When I met him,
yeah,
he was living right down there near where First Street meets Temple, down there near the Bob Marionette Theater, and Belmont's there, that musical they're building, and that hill goes up, that's the little shortcut hill. Okay, this is downtown, sort of downtown L.A. Yeah. So he was living in a little apartment there before he met Kathy and got the place in New York and her place and the other places that they have now because they made money. He was living in some little apartment, right? And probably, you know, squeezing by. And so I said, I have to move out of this place. And he goes, oh, I'll help you do it. Oh, all right, okay. So he drives up. It's Gary Leonard's place at the end of Echo Park Avenue. We had all that trash like a Watts Towers thing. They said, get out of here, Gary, that's what they told him. You know. So I had to move out of there. I was moving out of there. And up the back way, land off of Stadium Way exit, where Stadium Way meets Riverside. Now it's closed. He came up that way. And I hear this car coming up the hill. Steaming and farting and belching and gasping for air. This horrible, ugly-looking blue Belvedere station wagon. Like those two chickens drive in that commercial. But it's a station wagon. It's even worse. So he comes driving up. I go, God, I wonder if that's Tom. What kind of cars he got, right? And I look out, and it is. So we load up his car with all my stuff, which wasn't much, just guitars and amps and some clothes and posters and my Rolodex. And we drive the last bit of Landa. We're at the top of Echo Park. We start going down Echo Park. Halfway down, right about Princeton, where the little school is, we run out of gas.
At least you're going downhill.
Yeah, right. We're running. And Tom is getting nervous, right? He's going, because he's real shy then, you know, before Kathy bought him. And we're getting down, and we go through this last stop sign to where the gas station is. And he goes, and he pulls into the gas station. He goes, well, I go, I know, we're out of gas. What do you want? He goes, are you still going to give me the $15 for helping you move? I go, here's 25. Come on, put some gas in. He was hammering and hauling like I didn't know we were out of gas. We're coasting through stop signs, right? People are honking at us. And he's going, we're up, you know, the gas. That guy's record before. That's true. Do you have bass here, Mike? Drop
I was born in the country. I was raised in town.
I'm fed by your mama.
From my hips on down. Thank you.
wanted to come down from the mushrooms. Give me some mushrooms, Matt, if I can play. Must have been wearing a baseball cap. Special message. Yeah, I was always wondering where I could put that little noodle licking in a song. A little more noodle sauce. He's doing that lick like from that play the G, always use the fourth, and the major third, down to the seventh. It always works. Play the fourth before you hit the seventh. Next! So, one time at the can you play something that's got a beat? One time at the in fact, Matt, put an edge in you and beat it. One time at the Zero, I was playing along with my guitar after a gig with the Pigs, and playing along with the Zero jukebox, and I kept playing all the songs right. And someone said, "I bet you can't play all those songs right." So he put $50 down. I started playing parts of every song right. Yeah, he just took his $50 and left the whole... He left the building. Like what's that band? The Alan Parsons Project. Sounds like the Alan Parsons Project's rehearsing for a part they don't have yet. Travel so hard, ooh, wait a long time for the next change. Ooh, wait a long time for the mushrooms. Is this a test to see how many things I'll break after 10, 15 minutes? He is in the spin cycle. Turn around. His head stays still, but his finger spins around his head.
trouble so hard.
Is that Joe and the Echoes?
Don't nobody know my trouble for God. Don't nobody know my trouble for God. Oh, Lordy, my
there's a beat.
For the water to make it grow. Melrose somewhere.
Keep rocking.
I'm lost on Melrose. In his t-shirt store. Forever.
See, my brother Matt's got a wide selection of music. It sort of fits his figure.
June 17, 2006. It's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro show.
Thank you.
Show with Carlos, Guitarlos, and something new that you just
I wrote that the day. Stop talking when I'm interrupting. I wrote that the day of the rehearsal, the day before we recorded.
Actors rehearse. We practice.
Shh. But don't tell anybody. Yeah, I wrote about 6 new songs for this new record, mixed by Mark Lynette. It'll be mastered in a couple of days.
What's the name of it?
Well, the name of the record? They might call it Handsome Wolf.
Oh, yeah, you were talking about Gary Leonard's going to get a marquee going.
Yeah, yeah. So, the song is written like the day before we recorded it. And it's live. The whole record's live. Bass, drum, guitar, live singing, live everything. There's only 2 overdubs on the whole record. 3 if you count the watchboard.
Yeah. Did you use thimbles on your fingers?
No, I just went and bought some spoons.
Spoons?
Yeah.
I've seen dudes use keys.
Keys, cymbals, that point on Matt's head, almost anything.
How many tunes?
18 songs.
Whoa.
About 63 minutes. I'd like to put 30 on every record and do it every other week, but no one wants to do that.
So you're in a record mode.
Record, yes. I am in record mode.
Compared to the old days when it was just gigs, now it's...
Yeah.
Now you want work.
Oh, yeah. don't ever win an award from the LA Weekly. All of a sudden, we didn't call you back because we thought we couldn't afford you guys. Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah, that song is called Heartbreaker. Got some cool chords, like these here. It's a little different on the blues.
You're playing D. Boone's guitar. Can you?
No, I'm playing my guitar. I don't know what happened to his.
Do you remember
Boone
showing him some stuff?
Oh, sure. I like
about,
that guy.
Yeah, but he told me about you showing him
some stuff. And I played him that my first song. Running Roads. I said, hey, yeah. Sounds like you guys, like playing somewhere.
He told me he got some licks off you.
So he can trade me this guitar for this. That I already own. I'm just being nice. This is a pretty nice guitar. It's a 125 with a dog ear on it. A guitar with a dog ear. Oh, cool. No, it's got it. That means
so
a pickup.
Far.
The only thing that's not original are these pegs.
Yeah.
And these strings, of course. And these knobs.
Those knobs. Top hat.
I have my original knob. Can they see this on the air?
They're going to have to feel it.
Okay, yeah. Anybody want to lip sync me?
What you think of his playing? He was a little different.
I liked it. I liked it. You guys,
trebly.
As I described it in your movie. Oh, what's that guy's name who did that movie?
Keith.
Hey, send me a copy, you line sack and new wave shit. I'll send you a copy, Carl. I'll send you a copy.
No, I'll make sure you get it because I got it, my pad.
Okay.
I got it.
And so as I described, I liked your guy's sound. I described it in the film as what, Matt?
Avant Garage.
Not Avant. It isn't a nasal spray. Jeez, what are you? This guy's not even high. That's his problem. Avant Garage instead of Avant Garde. Avant Garage on the cutting edge of that guy's garage. Oh, which described it really well, I thought.
Do you think bigger guys have more tone?
I know bass players do. No, really. Bass players hit it and they got that meat behind it. You know? You could be a bass player. You could be two bass players, Matt. You could have dos. You could battle out with Mike and Kira all by yourself. Stop laughing at him, Matt. I mean,
Watt.
Mike.
Matt
Watt!
Matt is Watt upside down.
That's right. Looks like an asshole to me. I like that band, the Minutemen. I'm glad he gave me this guitar here in the future. Thank you there in the past.
Are you going to tour this record?
I hope so. I hope so, yeah. I want to get a
trio that we saw at Liquid Kitty?
At the Empty Kitty, yeah.
Empty Kitty.
But it wasn't empty.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't empty. We get people in there.
No.
That's why he has us two or three times a month. And there's no cover. We play a couple times a month at the Liquid Kitty. That's on Pico, a block east of Bundy, right next to a brand new building that used to be an old funky place called the Club 88.
Club 88, I was going to say. And down the street was Music Machine.
Yeah, a block west of Bundy.
That's right.
Same side of the street.
Played many gigs there.
If you go to thekitty.com, K-I-T-T-Y, you'll find out about the place.
Yeah. Club 88 has strong pissman.
Or you can go to Carlos Guitarlos, .com, and find out about it. What?
Club 88 has strong piss smell in it.
Yeah.
Wasn't it funky?
Cheap beer. That's probably why. One night we played there. There's a picture of this in Gary Leonard's book, Make the Music Go Bang.
Yeah.
Oh, it was, we were the headliner. Then it was Frank, the folk singer. Remember
yeah,
her?
Yeah, with PH.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
PH Balance Frank. And then it was some Latin band, Friend of the Lobos, opening up, a friend of somebody. And there's a line going out around the block. And we made a lot of money that night because it was no ins and outs. I always did that. I said, no ins and outs, Wayne. So everybody wanted to go out and smoke a cigarette. More money to get back in. I was a dog. So it was so hot in there that those old swamp coolers were blowing out water. Durf got up on stage, tried to sing, took a couple of breaths and passed out.
Durf Scratch.
Yeah.
Have you seen him lately?
I haven't seen him for years.
No, I did a couple of years ago at the Tangier or somewhere.
Oh, Hollywood.
Somewhere.
Los
somewhere,
Feliz.
Yeah.
What was your favorite club to play in the old days?
Well, I like the Cafe because I practically live there. But the Whiskey or the Roxy, they were actual clubs.
Good sound.
And we used to make money at them and play them a lot. And before this pay-to-play crap.
Yeah, yeah.
Mario and Elmer liked us. One time we opened up for Willie DeVille.
Yeah, New
the,
York.
The junkie from New York. Maybe he's not doing junk because he's dead or someone tied him down. But, and he was, and so we said, Mario, Elmer, where's our dressing room? You can't have it tonight because they got their friends in one room and they're in the other room. Oh, okay, that's okay, fine. But I'm going to pay you a little bit more, don't worry. You get all your drinks free too. Okay, well, can we get something to eat? Well, all the stuff we made, so the kitchen help gets back, is in their room. Well, they're not going to eat it. They're all high. Well, I know, but they want it there in case their other friends come in later that aren't as high. Okay, well, he goes, you know what, bug it. So he opened the door, we went in, took all their food out and ate it out in the hall, left the trays there and everything. So it was kind of funny, I thought.
We did that with Public Image. D. Boone ate all the
pubic sand. Image? I have my original knob. Did you guys say, what with Public Image?
D. Boone ate all their chow.
You know what? You remember that guy, Filthy McNasty? He had a club called the Horizon Club, which now is the Viper Room.
The
Central too. This is 1970 when my brother was playing there in a band called Horizon, one of his other bands. It was a big horn kind of band. And so I kind of knew him for over the years. And so I'm working for him. He's starting to have punk shows out at HJ's.
I remember that.
Right across there. He was part owner of that too. So I'm over there. He goes, Carlos, I want you to, you know everybody, so I want you to come out and work the door and keep the kids cool. Okay. So nothing was going on, just a bunch of punk rock kids having fun. But Mike Ness and Chris and some other guys were drinking out in the parking lot. Chris, the drummer who owns the bike. And so the manager goes, we're having trouble. We're having big trouble. But I saw a cop drive by half an hour ago and social distortion is drinking out in the parking lot. I thought, oh, cool. So I went out there, and he goes, you have to stop him. I go, oh, no. I'm thinking, oh, no. So I go up there, and I go, hey, you know, you guys got to stop drinking because this guy is kind of an asshole, and he's just nervous because it's one of his first punk shows, and you guys have brought in a big crowd, and, you know, he's just nervous. You know, he doesn't know it's going to be cool. A couple of chairs maybe be busted. So they smarted off to me. They go, well, what are you going to do about it, Carlos? Drink all our beer? And I thought, that's it. The only cool thing I can do is take the beer and drink it all in front of them. So I said, yeah. I took the beer out of his hand before he could hand them out, drank it, took the 11 more beers on the tall thing, took 11 more beers out of his hand, drank them one at a time. Down. You know, like those guys that can shoot beers, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I drank 12 beers, gave them back to him, and said, get back inside. Get back inside. And so they thought it was cool. So they went inside. There wasn't any trouble.
Were you good buds with Del Duce?
Oh, sure. Eldon, yeah. He was the top of his class.
Because he hung around the Cafe a lot.
Did you know he was the top of his class when he was in school?
Like up in Seattle?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that.
Pretty smart guy.
Yeah. I didn't know he was younger than me. He was like a year
younger.
Well,
isn't everybody, Mike? Even me?
No, but I knew he was a smart guy because I would talk with him.
Hey! Oh, yeah, he actually had a brain, except for a couple of months when he was out in front of Playboy Liquor, and he'd tell everybody he was top Jimmy. They'd all buy him drinks. Yeah, I'm on that Van Halen song. Drinking out in the parking lot. And then Buddy Miles used to panhandle money in Ralph's. Bronson and Franklin used to pay and handle money to get angel dust. Hi, my name is El Duce. So he was El Duce, and El Duce was Jimmy. And Jimmy was drunk. He didn't know any of it. Yeah, El Duce was top. He's a pretty smart guy.
Yeah.
I used to be the doorman at the Zero on 1955 Cahuenga.
Yeah.
Before they moved around to 1648 Wilcox and over near Gardner.
And by Pink's eventually.
Yeah, that was the last one, yeah.
Have you seen Polkner lately?
Polkner, he looks like a wall of salam. He looks like a wall of chorizo. He's as wide as he is as he used to be tall because he's being pulled down by his weight. He is one wall of chorizo.
So you seen him recent?
He was at the club right after you left the other time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he shows up late.
God. Is he still living up in that apartment?
No, he moved out of there, went to England, and then he moved back, then he moved to Boston or Philadelphia, then he moved back, then he moved to New York. Now he's back down there, 3rd and Hoover. Charlie, he lived at the 01 on Melrose,
yeah.
Over near Pink's. Now, Pink's serves a balanced meal. Hot dogs are so long, you have to balance them. Visuals on balance.
There was a club near there called Blackie's. That's how I found out about Pink's.
Oh, yeah.
You can see how far Pedro is. So, I only knew about Hollywood from the punk days.
Yeah, we got off the freeway.
Well, it ends.
Got on Nowhere's Lane, went all the way down to the end practically of Nowhere's Lane.
Yeah.
Turned left on Where the Hell Am Iville, and here we are in the middle of nowhere.
On the corner, get stabbed and shot.
I'm not worried about that. I can handle myself.
All roads lead to Pedro.
Yeah, you can't pass through Pedro because the freeway ends here.
Yeah.
Remember, so one time this guy comes knocking on my door. He says, "I was just passing through." I said, "You can't pass through. Got to end up here." How do you pass through, Pedro?
So you guys used to be three fat hippies, and you came up to Hollywood. And the rest is boring. It's history.
His story, not my story.
Ain't my story. I didn't say nothing.
We're going to play another song here from your new record.
Okay, let's find
it's called
one.
It oh, ain't
yeah.
Right.
It ain't Right. The song is 1 minute and 49 seconds, only because I lengthened it.
Well, what's the story behind it?
It's supposed to be like, I wanted to write a Ramones-style Little Richard song. Down to the Mariano, now, the bass on this is cool. It's that old Willie Dixon trick. Instead of going, it's like, rest, like.
Lay out on the one.
Yeah, you never
lay out
hit
on
it.
The one.
Yeah, lay out on the one, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, lets it breathe. Okay, here we go. It Ain't Right, Carlos Guitar.
Wait. Make sure you do it right. Okay. A one, two, three. I went down to the party and the whole place was jumping so tight. I was falling all around, I bombing everything in sight. Bye. That was a song called Save a Dance.
Yep.
That's a Memphis rock and roll soul song, and it's like a real one. It's a song I wrote. And that's Marcy Levy singing with me and Vince on saxophone.
Vince Maroney.
Yeah.
Played with him, and I had a band called Pair of Pliers and Crew of the Flying Saucer. He played drums for me, and he played sometimes
second. Pair of Pliers. I thought it was a couple of knuckleheads.
Same thing, yeah.
You and him, when you go on the road, you go look for the hottest chilies in the world and stick them in your eyes and your nostrils. I can stick one up my ass. That doesn't bother me. You guys are nuts.
No burn, no learn.
No burn, no brains. Yeah, anyway, so yeah, and it's a rock and roll soul song, a Memphis one.
Steve Crawford, you like him?
That whole thing, yeah. And that's from the record Hell Can Wait, which has been out for about 7 months. I got paid three times in the last two or three weeks from proper records from over in England. So they're right on top of it. Had trouble with Burnside, though.
Yeah.
They haven't paid off yet, but it was okay. They were worried about returns.
Yeah.
And you can go to any Borders and find it, or anywhere in the world and find it. It's called Hell Can Wait.
Now, how'd you record that one?
At the same studio,
yeah,
that you recorded at on the first record,
mm-hmm.
and mixed at the same place, Chris somebody, the guy that works for Beck on the road and everybody.
Oh,
and everybody.
Yeah.
Chris somebody.
I know him, Chris.
He's out in Panorama City, which is also in the middle of nowhere.
Northwest Valley.
Right next to San Pedro. Yeah, right. And right in the middle of all the freeways. You drive the one. There's no freeways near. And then
far from Pedro.
But there's somewhere in between. Each end is nowhere.
Hollywood.
Yeah. And it was done in the same place, made the same place. A lot of the same guys. I used a different drummer on most of the stuff. But Joey played on it. And that song is called Save a Dance. It's a rock and roll soul song. But a real one. Not what they call rhythm and blues now or whatever, you know. Everybody's warbling like a bad Stevie Wonder.
Like a Stax.
Yeah, Stax. That's exactly what it is, all the horns. And Gene's playing piano on that. On the next song, called
Say You Love Me,
I wrote that. Well, we were finished putting Gene on the record. Organ, piano, one electric piano song, the last one you heard. All acoustic piano except for that last song. And then organ. So Gene's playing, after about 8 or 9 hours of watching Gene drink and eat and play songs and telling him what the songs are and showing him a little bit, and then he played them all. After that, we were getting ready to leave. Gene was in the bathroom, and I just said, wait a minute. Leave all that stuff, Tom. Turn the piano mics back on. I plugged in my guitar, and I said, Gene, just play a fast one like Big Joe Turner and Pete Johnson duo stuff in the late 30s and 40s. You know, right? Like 1937, they were at the Spirituals to Swing concert put on by John Hammond Sr. His father is John Hammond's father.
Sure.
And so Robert Johnson was supposed to do that, but he had died. So Pete Johnson and Big Joe Turner represented the American music as far as Kansas City blues and shouts. So the next song is called Say You Love Me. We made it up right on the spot. I sketched out some words real quick. We made it up on the spot and did it in one take. It's a Kansas City shout. And Gene Taylor, the greatest boogie-woogie piano player in the world, says, and all his friends say, that this is out of the top two or three boogies he's ever recorded. And he's, you know, he was in the Blasters for years.
Yeah.
He's been in Canned Heat for 13 years. I mean, he's been in the Thunderbirds for 13 years. He was in Canned Heat. He's played with a lot of good people.
Sure.
Played with Ronnie Hawkins.
He digs
Canada.
This boogie woogie.
He digs this one, yeah. And we made it up right on the spot. It's a shouting song. It's a shout.
Yeah. Here we go.
Big Joe Turner style.
Some big shout. Not for Beat Rush. God is at hand.
So halfway through that, halfway through that, Mark Dalton, the engineer, who played bass on most of the record, along with my friend Bill McBeath from up north, and Mike Heitzar played on two songs. But Mark Dalton jumped up and plugged his bass in halfway through. So it was a total improv.
That's great.
Which I like to do.
Yeah. Spontaneous. So, new record. Maybe get to tour it?
I hope so. Yeah, we're going to try and get a booker and sell the damn record instead of pushing it.
When's the last time you did a big tour?
Last year and the year before, went over to England.
Oh, wow. But what about U.S.?
2 years ago, went all around the country for a couple of months.
With a band?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
With Marcy Levy in the band. She was in the band till March 7th. The woman singing on Save a Dance, the one that went, I need love just like everyone. She's singing with me on that. She was with Clapton for seven years. She wrote Lay Down Sally and a bunch of other hits. She had the fastest rising British single ever called Stay with Shakespeare's Sister in 1992. She won the Ivor Novello Award, too. It's over in Britain. When her and I went to England, because this Straight from the Heart was the discovery of the year by the BBC, her and I went to England for a week. We were on the radio 3 or 4 times a day on the BBC. We might go back to the same station the next day, but they'd hook us up to a different part of the country.
Ah.
And then, and we did one gig there at the Borderline and sold it out. And my friend Bill McBeath, who owns the Ivy Room, no, I didn't say Ivy Room, I said Ivy, up in the East Bay, San Francisco, in the East Bay, he was on his way to Turkey to close up one of his bars because it was getting to be too much trouble to own a bar there. So he was on his way to Turkey, so he stopped by there. And this drummer named Osmus already lived over there, so he played with me here. So we played the Borderline and sold it out. It was good.
Great.
We got a 5-star review from David Sinclair, one of the few he gave away that year. He's like the biggest critic over there in the London Times. Times of London or something.
This spiel is wearing you out, Carlos. You got a gig in an hour.
Oh, crap. I have to eat, too.
In Long Beach.
I have to get there.
Yeah. Luckily, it's only like 8 miles, right across Vincent Thomas and Gerald Desmond Bridges. In between, Terminal Island.
State prison.
Oh, well, I'll
federal. But it's minimal security.
Okay, I'll be able to get out.
Give you some South Bay geography.
Yeah. So how often do you guys do this show?
Once a week when I'm back. I'm not on tour.
Once a week when you're a wetback.
You're a mojado.
You got any ID?
That's a heavy issue now.
Yeah, it is.
It's kind of creepy.
It is. Another excuse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So why don't you play another song?
Off of Hell or the new thing?
Off of Hell can wait.
Okay, what do you like?
You want to hear slow one? You want to hear a fast one? Or you want to hear a half-assed one?
We just heard some boogie-woogie.
Okay, play is number 6, I Found Someone?
Yep.
Okay, this features Marcy Levy on her own verse and her own chorus.
Okay, here we go.
And then we sing the last one together. And we wrote this song on stage one night. I called out all the chords.
Whoa.
And she made up her verse on stage.
Is that their cozies?
Yeah, it's got a lot of chords.
Okay, here we go.
Those guys. Let me know.
Just one more day, and I'll know the way. And if you leave, we're now who to say. Oh yeah.
Someone from Hell Can Wait.
We wrote that on
album.
Stage.
Written on stage in the moment. You got a little graffiti here. Peace, heart, note, infinity.
Peace, love, music forever.
Yeah.
Dude.
Word.
Dude.
I'm into it. Do you know any young people playing nowadays that you like?
Well, I don't get out much unless I'm playing.
Yeah, I know. I'm kind of like that, too.
I'm like
what happens is kids give me music after the gigs. That's how I know about some stuff that's happening. Not really stuff on MTV or anything, but people making music in the garages and bedrooms.
Well, for some reason, musicians don't talk to me after gigs.
Yeah, we ran away, huh?
Huh?
Well, he had work the next day early. Yeah, I mean, you were hollering from the hatch, where's your bass?
Yeah.
You didn't tell me to bring a bass. I didn't know.
Well, why the fuck would you go somewhere without one? What the hell's wrong with you?
I thought I
Mike,
got
what?
I got had
a bass?
I got to be spectator mode.
Nah.
Nope. Always have your bass. You've been playing with Vince a lot, huh? How many years?
About 3 on and off.
Wow. How'd you meet him? He's actually from Orange County originally.
I met him from my friend David Black.
Oh.
And he had a Dan Petrucci on drums. He had Vince on sax. Mark Doten on bass. That was his band role. He's a guitar player.
Yeah, yeah.
But the thing was, he was doing about 8 or 9 of my songs in his set. And telling some of my jokes.
Oh, man.
What an idiot. So,
did you just walk in on that and just saw it? Did you just have, or did you hear about him doing it?
Oh, I saw him doing it.
You saw it.
So I just said, oh, there's a good band. A bunch of smart guys.
Telling your jokes. Damn. What about your stories?
Oh, He'd always say I was picking on him. David did, so he says, I don't want to play with you anymore. Okay. Thank you for the band. Clapton stole Marcy's band twice.
Wow.
Twice. When they were in Oklahoma. She's from Detroit.
Yeah.
Stole her band twice. You know, Oakley and what's it, Carl Radle, Terry Oaklander.
Did you say I'll pay you more?
Huh?
He just said, I'll pay you more?
Well, he needed a new record, but she was under contract the first time to Shelter Records. She was living with Leon Russell. She was under Shelter, under contract to Shelter. So she had 18 more months. As soon as that was done, she joined the band, too, Clapton band, and wrote a bunch of his songs and stuff, like Lay Down Sally.
Yeah, the sickness that came on you, it kind of slowed you down a little bit.
What did?
Like what was it called? Congenital heart?
Congestive heart failure.
Congestive heart failure.
Drugs, alcohol.
Yeah. Right.
And so, diabetes and drugs.
So there was kind of a
diabetes
change
and
of
drugs.
Change of lifestyle.
Well, no, I just stopped playing in clubs. Played mostly in the streets and could make a lot more money and get a lot more drugs. And, no, I never stopped playing.
No, I'm not saying playing. I said lifestyle. Well, I guess playing is a lifestyle.
Yeah, that's I don't have a life. What are you talking about? Who is this guy, man?
No, the chemical thing.
Oh, well, no, it actually helped. Made a lot of money playing the streets. I made more money playing
the streets. No, I'm not talking about the streets. I'm talking about the lifestyle change because of the sickness.
Oh, no, hell no. That didn't slow me down. I can still sing louder than anybody. Even though I can't
but you're
breathe.
Not as much barracho.
I don't drink or do any drugs or anything for years now.
Yeah. Oh, that was actually before the sickness.
I stopped right before, yeah. I stopped in 2001 right after the next day after Jimmy's wake.
Okay.
At the 01 on Melrose. That was it. I heard three people say, look at Carlos. Carlos is next.
Oh, man. So you wanted to show them.
You know, I'm always pissing somebody off. I do my best to piss everybody off equally, though. I don't want to leave anybody out.
You think you play better?
Now? I play better all the time. I know how to play. I like to play. Any song you want to hear, if I don't know it, let me hear it once and I'll play it.
We play the Wizard of Oz song?
Oh, I like that song. You want to hear it?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, for a while, I was on drugs and drinking and playing on the streets, paying $35 a day for a room, like $1,200 a month. And I was like, you know, my hair is falling out, my teeth, my nails. I have a goat manicure. And, like, things were getting really, really, really bad. But then I thought, in San Francisco, I'm all by myself, living. And I go, things could be worse. Carlos, don't worry, things could be worse. Then I thought to myself, how? Then I thought, you could be Brother Matt. I would not be just a nothing. My head all full of stuffing. My heart's all full of pain. Ouch. With the thoughts I'd be thinking, I'd be home and I'd be drinking if I only had a brain. I could wallow with hours, like Matt smoking all the flowers, consulting with the rain. I would laugh and be merry, maybe even pop a cherry if I only had a brain. Well, I could tell you why. The ocean's near the shore. When you're in Pedro, it's everywhere. I would think of things I've never thought before. And then I'd stop Pedro and stop some more. Well, I'd stop more now. Let's see. Okay, ready? 5, 4. If I only had half of what's left in my brain.
Yeah,
out of tune here.
Carlos, young people ask you for advice about music?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
I got this kid, he's my younger brother. someone on his wife's family side, their kid lives in Vegas. I met him at Christmas, and he's a bass player, and he really likes Flea, Mr. Michael Balzeri. He likes Flea, and he's learning his songs out of books and on records and stuff, and he asked me to leave a message once, so I did and stuff, and I just tell him, look, you know, just stay clear of trouble, work your way through other stuff, not just music. Keep your friends that are true, and just play. Whenever you can play, play. There's no excuse not to if you want to. You know, learn about scales and modes and chords and where they fit into other stuff that you like. Don't just like the stuff and not know what it's made out of. And so I showed him that over the phone. I can teach anybody in 1 hour. I can teach even Matt. I can teach Matt all the scales, how to build any chord, all and all the inversions in 1 hour. All of them. Every mode, every scale.
The key is retaining it.
No, I can do it on a table form.
Well, you can, but the guy hearing it.
No, I can do it in a rote method. Where they can, I give them a table, like the edge, like the numbers 1 through 8, the numbers 1 through 8, across and then down on the outside, the top and then the left. And then there would be C, would be the cornerstone. C through C on the scale.
Right.
And then C through C on the scale going down.
Right.
And then the second one would be D, E, F, G, A, B, C, D. That's your second mode.
Right.
Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, re. And you could go do, re, mi. And then you could go any direction with it, as long as you're moving this way. And it'll work. It's like a puzzle. You can teach anybody to fill it out over and over to learn it by rote. But I can show them how to get the form immediately.
What about the other side, the rhythm?
The rhythm?
Can you teach that?
I can teach it if they already have an idea of some other song that they like, sure. And then I place the same type of rhythm in another completely different type of song at a different tempo to show people how things work.
Well, you said you played with some of the mothers. Did you ever do fives and sevens?
Well, when I played with the mothers once, it was the first be-in ever at Elysian Park. I mean, near the police academy in Elysian Park, not Griffith Park. I made a mistake. Not where they had the not near the carousel. That was the Lovins.
Love it.
About a month later or so.
Yeah.
And so the diggers and my friend Cleo from Green Power, who would hand out food at all these gatherings, and the diggers, I knew a couple of the diggers. I knew a lot of the Rainbow family. And I knew my friend Rudy Zamora, who lived in Franklin, just east of Western, in a real old nice house. He was putting together shows all the time. He put together the first be-in. He coordinated between all these people. And so the mothers are going to back up this guitar player who had a studio on Sunset right near Western in a house. Now it's a beauty supply place. And I forgot his name. He was really, really good. And he was from Dallas. And they weren't ready yet. So he says, Carlos, get up and play two or three songs. So I get up and I start playing my favorite Robert Johnson song that I heard Clapton do also. I got rambling all on my mind. So I did that, and halfway through, the mothers got up and played. All of them, Roy and what's the guy and his wife, Ian and Ruth Underwood. They got up, and Carl Black. And all those guys got them played behind me. I thought, wow, the mothers. And I'm thinking, so I did like three songs. I did three Robert Johnson songs.
They were backing you.
Yeah, well, they were on, their stuff was on stage ready, but the one person wasn't ready. So Rudy, who put the whole show together, the first being, said, Carlos, get up and play. So I played in front of about maybe 800 people, 1,000. That was kind of fun. I wasn't nervous. The first time I played when I was 10, at my grade school or something, I was nervous the first time. That was it.
Only the first
time. Oh, that was it.
They're all pants shooters for me. Wow.
Here comes Tina. Tina, put your clothes on.
Oh, thank you, Tina. You know, is there somebody you'd like to play with that you haven't?
Yeah, I'd like to play with Stevie Winwood and get him back playing straight on.
Wow.
That guy's good.
Oh, yeah. Even when he was a kid, huh?
Even when he was with Spencer Davis.
That's
even
what I'm saying.
Even with Traffic.
Spencer Davis,
I like
organ
that.
Organ and singing.
And playing guitar, too. Somebody help me now. Somebody help me, yeah. Won't somebody tell me what I've done wrong. That song, Somebody Help Me. He was really good. He is.
Anyone else?
I'd like to play with Tom Jimmy, but he's dead.
Yeah. Good point.
I'd like to jam with D Boone. But he ain't around.
Modern day Cholo song.
Huh?
Modern day Cholo song.
You want to hear a modern day Cholo song? This is Art Fine's favorite song.
Yeah.
And like Ray Mandrick's favorite all time rock and roll song is Dance with the Baby, which we heard up the top. And but this is Art Fine's favorite song. The love I want, the love you've got. Let me tune it. I'll tune it down here. Can't tune it at the proper place.
It's a floating bridge, so it's probably in the wrong place.
Yeah, it is. You don't have another guitar? The love I want. The love you got, and for me there could be no other one. Yeah, some way I'll be back someday. So then I'll be the only one. The time gets so hard, I cannot love you. I help you, love you, try to show the way. We can do it forever. Well, if you want me, let me know. The love we've got, it's the love we want. For you there could be no other one. Yes, your way, you'll be back someday. So then I'll be the only one. The short version. That's like a Muscle Shoals or kind of a style, too. It's almost a Stax, but it's a soul song. It's a Chitlin ballad, too. People don't play that kind of music anymore. That's rhythm and blues.
Yeah.
What they call rhythm and blues now is somebody else trying to sing like Stevie Wonder.
What do you think of Jimi Hendrix?
I saw him play once, twice, actually.
Yeah, what was that
like? I saw him at the Monterey Pop Festival, and I saw him at Marshall's Club. Marshall was like Janet Cunningham, it was in the 80s. In the 60s and 70s, Marshall, I forgot his name, the last name, who's always down at Venice Beach walking. He's a little bit older now. Marshall would get all the long-haired hippies and rockers into movies, the way Janet Cunningham did over at Cash. So he had a club with Rodney. It became Rodney's Disco.
It was Disco.
But before that, it was Marshall's something or other club. And Hendrix was in there on the weekend that Iron Butterfly and the Blues Image, they were switching guitar players. So the rhythm sections were there in different formations, jamming the whole weekend. There were no bands. It was just them jamming the whole weekend. You know, to like form into the other, switch the guitar players over, like a metamorphosis. So that's the way they did it. Then it wasn't like, oh, have my lawyer call your lawyer or some crap, you know. Or, oh, meet me in Pedro.
Pedro.
Pedro. Over at Pedro's house in Pedro. So they were jamming the whole weekend at this club, and the bathroom door was a very small door. And I had to lean into it a little bit. And as I lean into it, I'm looking around the side to make sure I don't bump into it. It's very narrow. And I bump right into Hendrix. He's coming out of the bathroom. I go, hey, Jimmy, how you doing? And he goes, hey. So I go in the bathroom, and then...
he talked like that?
Look around for the drugs that he might have left. No. And then when I came out, he had gotten up on stage and jammed. So I saw him twice. That was kind of cool.
He was smoking?
He was good, yeah. I like his stuff. He played with
Isley Brothers.
Yeah, and he played with Little Richard, and he played with what's the guy who did Soul Twist on Sam Cooke's Angle?
Sam Cooke.
No, Sam Cooke said in a record, "Play that one called Soul Twist on the radio." It was King Curtis. King Curtis, who was a contractor, soloist, or arranger on 9 out of 10 of the Atlantic sessions. So, you know, Chitlin' music is this. It's always a low riff. And Hendrix did that stuff a lot. Here's the number one Chitlin' lick. And the number one Chitlin' rhythm. Which they stole to make
Funky Town.
Soul music out of, like, Mustang
Take
Sally
down
and
to
stuff.
Funky Town.
Yeah, Mustang Sally and all that stuff. But
Shotgun.
Hendrix,
it's kind of like Shotgun.
Hendrix played with all those people.
Junior Walker.
The king of the Chitlin' circuit was Ike Turner, who also had the first...
guitar, rhythm guitar.
Who also had the first rock and roll record with all the correct elements, the stuff he did for Jimmy Breslin on Rocket 88.
Well, you know, we're out of time. It's been my
baby, baby, baby. I know that song. Out of time. Yeah.
Really, Carlos. Thank you much for coming aboard and visiting me and Brother Matt here in Pedro.
When do I get paid, Matt?
So good luck at the gig tonight.
You going to go down to the Viento de Agua?
Yeah.
What's the address there?
4007 East 4th Street.
What is it? 4007 East 4th Street.
Okay.
And that's at?
Long Beach,
and that's at the corner of?
LBC.
4th and Termino.
4th and Termino.
562-434-1182.
Yeah, come on down. It's free.
It's the day after Bloomsday, June 17, 2006, edition of the Wad from Pedro Show. Thank you again. Truly. Safe seas and keep being creative and plucking, picking.
You can go to my website, CarlosGuitarlosXCon.
Keep your powder dry.